This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, broadcasting independently from the John Waldron Arts Center. You're listening to WFHB 98.1, 91.3, 100.7, and 106.3 FM. It is 5 o'clock. That means it's time for the Daily Local News here on Community Radio.
You're tuned to
WFHB 91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer-powered,
listener-supported.
Community Radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, January 18th, 2017. Coming up later in the program, we'll hear from area legislators as they present to the League of Women Voters. That's coming up on today's WFHB feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street. On Tuesday, IU Health and Bloomington officials, along with Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, broke ground on the new hospital. Voices in the Street asks your friends and neighbors how they feel about the bypass location of the new hospital. But first, your daily headlines.
Indianapolis is among 20 cities being considered for Amazon's second corporate headquarters. Amazon announced today that Indianapolis made the short list of cities in consideration. City councils and mayors across the country have been offering incentives for the company to open a new campus. Amazon is reportedly expecting to invest $5 billion into its second North American headquarters. At least 238 cities in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada have applied. Amazon's new campus, also called Amazon HQ2, is expected to raise up to 50,000 jobs. The Indianapolis Star reports average salaries would exceed $100,000 a year. In a statement on its website, the Fortune 500 company states its public process for selecting a city was chosen because, quote, "We want to find a city that is excited to work with us and where our customers, employees, and the community can all benefit," unquote. Indiana Auditor Tara Klutz issued a statement on the state making it onto Amazon's shortlist, saying, quote, "It comes as no surprise to me that the leaders of Amazon have chosen Central Indiana as a finalist for HQ2. With our AAA bond rating, low cost of business, outstanding workforce, and high quality of life, I can think of no better place than the crossroads of America for Amazon's second headquarters to be built," unquote. Indianapolis's bid, along with many other cities' bids, are secret. The Seattle-based company is expected to decide on a site for HQ2 sometime this year.
This year marks the bicentennial of the city of Bloomington and Monroe County. As WFHB correspondent Jonna Chester reports, Bloomington is looking for area artists to construct a bicentennial song celebrating the occasion.
The Bloomington Arts Commission is seeking a musical work to celebrate the city's bicentennial. The commission is asking local musicians to submit an original piece that celebrates the city's past, present, and future. According to the BAC, applicants from all musical backgrounds are invited to participate and contribute. The chosen applicant will be asked to write a melody with lyrics that are, quote, "accessible to any untrained singer," end quote. The lyrics to the melody must be related to Bloomington in any of the following ways: a collaboration with a local poet or writer, a collaboration with a poet or writer connected to Bloomington, a song of a poet or writer's work with appropriate permissions and a demonstrated connection to Bloomington, an original piece that celebrates Bloomington, or an original piece inspired by a work of local public art. Submitted pieces will be reviewed by a panel of citizens, BAC members, and city government staff. The deadline for applicants is February 9th, and the winner will be announced on February 23rd. To learn more and to apply, listeners can visit bloomington.in.gov.
And that was WFHB correspondent Jonna Chester.
Officials from IU, the City of Bloomington, Monroe County, and the state legislature came together over the weekend for the bicentennial kickoff event in the Monroe County Government Center. This year marks the 200th anniversary of the founding of the City of Bloomington and Monroe County. Indiana University was founded 2 years later. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton asked the congregation to think of and thank those who have made Bloomington and Monroe County what it is today.
So maybe entering this bicentennial year, we can be thinking about what we want Bloomington and Monroe County to be like for whomever is going to be here 50 or 100 years from now. In this, our bicentennial year, let's pause and memorialize and thank those who came before us, whose spirit is kind of here. And that opening ceremony was evocative to think about the people who've walked on this ground for that period of time. And think about those who made those thousands and thousands of decisions that frame our today. And during this year, let's pause and imagine what we should be doing today and during the coming year and thereafter to pass along an even better community to the next generations.
IU President Michael McRobbie spoke about the history of Indiana University in Monroe County.
In 1854, when the county and the university were still young, IU's first building on the Seminary Square site was destroyed by fire. And the citizens of what was then a frontier community, pretty much, raised $10,000 to rebuild it. Oh, that buildings cost that much today. All those who gave at least $100 to help rebuild the university were given what was then known as a quietus scholarship, which was a full scholarship to IU that could be used by the donor or a family member. There was, don't laugh, there, because in fact it still exists. There was no provision for these scholarships to expire, so that when the original bearer of the quietus scholarship passed away, the scholarship could be handed down from generation to generation through wills. So those of you who may be eligible ones should actually go and check to see if you're eligible for one of these scholarships.
Indiana Senator Mark Stoops told the Assembly it's important to remember we're living in history.
They were here, and I think it's important to think about both from a historical perspective, how did they live and what did they do, but also their contribution to what we have as in Monroe County today. And to remember that still this is continuing. And so we should remember their contribution, but also their current situation, and think about what Monroe County will be in the future.
Stoops is a former Monroe County commissioner. He is now the state Senate representative of District 40. 200 years ago, the area known now as Monroe County was heavily forested American frontier. Monroe County was officially founded on January 14, 1818.
After 178 amendments over 5 months, the Bloomington City Council adopted the new comprehensive plan in its meeting last night. Housing has been a topic of an ongoing concern. Data provided by Ratio Architect saying that the city would need more than 13,000 new housing units was debated. The firm also projected that more than 6,000 aging units would need to be replaced. This created concern among residents that housing stock, especially historic housing, would be replaced instead of renovated. Councilmember Steve Volan.
You know, concerns about the language and the data cited were legitimate, that there was, for a figure that was as important, there was very little context to them, and frankly, they didn't reflect the reality within the city of Bloomington limits.
Councilmember Susan Sandberg says staff and council members have been able to come up with a better sense of what will be needed using Envision Tomorrow, an open access planning software.
According to the projected housing needs, 12,225 additional units will be needed to meet the growing population demand by 2040. This is approximately 556 units per year. This number includes both rental and owner-occupied units. With a growing population and aging of the existing housing stock, the projection also estimates that around 2,610 existing units will become obsolete by 2040 and will need to be at a minimum renovated to meet code.
Councilmember Chris Durbon thanked the public for getting involved in creating the comprehensive plan.
You know, word for word, it's a much improved document that reflects our community in a way that the original document just didn't quite succeed.
And Councilmember Dave Rollo commented, it takes a village.
The Monroe County Redevelopment Commission has unanimously approved making the Cook Group property on Curry Pike its own tax increment finance district, or TIF. The Bloomington-based company bought the former GE plant on Curry Pike late last year in an effort to expand its operations. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell spoke on the issue in last night's Redevelopment Commission meeting.
What this document essentially does is it creates a allocation area where the old GE plant was, and it would then use the funding from that allocation area to get some financing so that it could be an incentive for Cook to do some of the exterior work. Particularly, I think we're talking a lot, they're going to put a trail around it. Mm-hmm. They're going to do some parking improvements. They're going to do some other exterior improvements. And the total, I think, estimate of what this whole project is going to cost is $125 million. Mm-hmm. And so this is just kind of the incentive to help them.
According to Cockrell, the property's current assessed value is less than $7 million. County Council Member Jeff McKim told the commission the investment will have direct public benefit beyond being an incentive for corporate development. The newly established TIF district would be effective in 2018. The resolution next goes to the Plan Commission and then the county commissioners.
In other news, or in other county news, Rural Transit is struggling to increase ridership after having to reduce its routes last year. Rural Transit is the service of Area 10 Agency on Aging. Area 10's Executive Director Chris Myers says the issue is funding.
We are capable of expanding services at any time with appropriate local matches to support it. And I've done a lot of advocacy in the last year in Owen County for mm-hmm. that particular reason, yeah. because we had to have them meet their local match mm-hmm. in order to sustain those services, mm-hmm. and they really came forward for that. I think without having some sort of other local funds to support, you know, we don't get tax revenue. The mm-hmm. closest we get is pieced together. You know, we are rural mm-hmm. public transit. We don't get, you know, City of Bloomington income tax that Bloomington Transit does. If there was some other sort of funding that could help bolster that local match, that would actually be what was needed long term.
Myers gave an update on rural transit to the Monroe County Redevelopment Commission last night. She says in the short term, they'll need to piece together other grants and solicit corporate sponsorship.
You have to do this at the same time. You can't just all of a sudden increase services without buses to mm-hmm. increase. So there's a cost to that, too.
Rural transit is partially funded through state and federal grants, but those grants require a local match. Myers says those match dollars come from a variety of organizations.
But we have the contract services that we have with Ivy Tech, with Stonebelt, with SOI, LARC, PCCS up in Putnam County. We have Medicaid trips that we make, so the Medicaid reimbursement for those go into that. We have bus advertisement. It's not very much, and we pay taxes on it. But every little bit counts.
The Redevelopment Commission offered Rural Transit one-time funding in 2017 to help provide local match dollars for 2017 grants. The funding secured buses and the transit schedule, which includes service to Ivy Tech. But Meyer says the Ivy Tech schedule had to be reduced after the school was unable to meet their $50,000 contract for services. According to Myers, Ivy Tech has reduced their commitment to $25,000, forcing Rural Transit to cut some daytime and late-night Ivy Tech trips. Myers says as a result, there's been a 30% drop in Ivy Tech ridership. Commission member Richard Martin asked Myers how ridership could be increased again. She says she continues to promote Rural Transit to Ivy Tech students and administrators, but growing ridership means upping the frequency of daytime routes, which will take more funding. Martin says now the commission has an investment in the service. Members would like to see the best return on investment possible. He acknowledges that may mean the commission will need to contribute funds again.
We have trip denials every day. Mm-hmm. We have people that we can't serve every day.
Myers says she'll work with potential partners in any way she can in an effort to increase funding and to improve access for riders.
Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Niehoff. Slotograph Niehoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Niehoff, law for business, community, and life.
The League of Women Voters hosted their first legislative update and candidate forum on January 4th. The League invited politicians from across South Central Indiana to address the assembly. In today's feature report, we'll hear from Indiana Senator Mark Stoops, whose legislation with regards to the logging at Yellowwood State Forest. Congressman Matt Pierce talked about his Death with Dignity legislation, and Congresswoman Peggy Mayfield talks about her enrolled legislation that covers law enforcement's medical bills if they're injured in the line of duty. Senator Mark Stoops begins today's featured report.
As I said, I have 10 bills filed. Some of those are an opportunity to carry forward bills that I've filed in the past. A number of bills I've had, it'll take years. It may take 2 years. If I'm lucky, I can get a bill through in one, but usually it's probably more of a matter of 2, 3, 4 years. I have a bill filed that I've had in the past. It's designated wild areas in state forest. That would be to actually delineate certain areas in the state forest system that will be exempt from logging and commercial extraction. One of those areas the State Division of Forestry has seemed to be focusing on over the last year, and that's the Yellowwood and Morgan Monroe backcountry area. This is an area that was the subject of studies by scientists from many different universities that identify these areas as some of the most biodiverse areas in the Midwest and also within the country. And some of the trees average age of over 100 years, so 120 years. My point with this wilderness bill is to say that we have areas of the state that are, maybe they're not old growth, but they're starting to verge towards what we can consider old growth if we left them alone for another 100 years or so. The Division of Forestry has decided to set the clock back on those areas and extract timber. They will tell you it's single tree selection. They'll say it's very low intensive, but their version of single tree selection is averaging 6 to 8 trees per acre. So if anybody can think of what a 1 acre lot, if you know anybody with a 1 acre lot, and think of somebody extracting 6 large trees and try to say that's low intensive, I think you'd say that they're at best misleading the public. Unfortunately, the governor is being misled as well. Hopefully we can help him see that there's reasons for protecting that. So that's Senate Bill 312. Along with that is a companion bill that requires the Division of Forestry to do a full cost-benefit analysis of logging in the state forest. So what is the cost of the state of putting in these gravel roads and frontage roads and skid areas? What's the cost of compaction of soil or loss of biodiversity? What's it going to take to extract invasives in the future? But part of that is, what is the impact of these logging trucks on local roads? So this would require that loggers have permits and bonding for impact to local roads. A logging truck can be 40 tons, and that's if it's loaded correctly, and a lot of times they're not. So if you think of these bridges that you see that may have a 5-ton capacity, 8-ton capacity, or local roads that they're rated for a matter of tons, and you can think, if somebody's making $100,000 off a logging sale, but it costs them $1 million just to repair a bridge or a road, then obviously that's not in the state's best interest.
And next we'll hear from Congresswoman Peggy Mayfield.
Last year I only had one bill passed, but it was a bill I worked 5 years on. It was to protect our reserve law enforcement officers, and it finally passed last year with only a single no vote between both chambers. So now that any reserve officer who is injured in the line of duty would be covered for their medical bills, which before there was no guarantee that they would be covered. So they will be covered for their medical bills. And since most of these guys work a regular job outside of their law enforcement opportunity, they would also get a minimum stipend of sorts for the time that they are off work if they cannot go back to their regular job.
We'll finish today's feature report with a legislative update from State Representative Matt Pierce.
So one of the bills I've introduced, you might have read about in the paper, heard a little bit about in the news, is an end-of-life options bill, which is based on Oregon's Death with Dignity Law, which has been in place about 20 years. And it essentially allows people who are have terminal diseases and their prognosis is that they will pass away within 6 months, that if they're facing a very painful and difficult death, they would have the option to seek medication that would help them end their lives on their own terms, which I understand is a controversial issue, but I think it's one worth having a conversation about. And so that's the main reason why I introduced the bill, is I want to try to jumpstart discussion about that. And what I'm hoping is the public will get engaged and they'll talk to their legislators about what they think about the bill. And then that might give people a little bit more confidence to kind of have a hearing on the bill and begin to discuss the issue a little bit more earnestly than it's been the case. So that that is out there.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
On Tuesday, IU Health broke ground on the new Bloomington Hospital and Regional IU Health Academic Center. The new hospital will be located on the bypass and is scheduled to open sometime in 2020. The current hospital on 2nd Street will be demolished. Voices in the Street asked your friends and neighbors how they feel about the new hospital's location, particularly with regards to continuing health services to the Bloomington community.
The IU Health Hospital over on 2nd Street is closing down in a couple years. They're planning on opening up a new one over towards the stadium. I'm asking people if they think the new hospital is necessary, if maybe game day traffic will create a hazard in terms of getting in there for emergency medical services. What's your opinion on the matter?
It's going to draw all the homeless people over to the stadium.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I'm homeless and we all go to the downtown one because it's closest and it's in distance of all the shelters. So if they move it over there and shut that one down, we're not going to go all the way south. We'll just end up crowding around the stadium.
Okay, so what's your opinion on the matter?
So I think the hospital is a great idea in theory. The problem with moving it up on 46 is the game day traffic, because the point of a hospital, especially a hospital emergency room, is to be able to address people's needs quickly. And on game day, when you have really, really bad traffic, you're going to have problems. It's also not centrally located, because now you're moving the hospital all the way over to the eastern fringe of the town when the majority of the town is west and south of the new location. So I think it's necessary, but I think that planning, I think there's a planning problem.
I suppose if I was in that situation, I would see it as a problem.
I believe it probably will create a hazard just because there's so many people and so much like traffic and car flow going through.
It's the question of accessibility. With the hospital being where it is, everybody has access to it. If it moves out to the bypass, you're just that much further away, more chance that somebody in critical need might not make it because they have to go further to get to the hospital as opposed to it being right there.
Work at a hotel, so as long as it brings business, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, it's stupid. Like,
It's been there. My sister was born there 30 years ago. Why would they tear down something that they're constantly working on?
Go ahead.
You're excited about
the money that IU's putting into the new facility and the fact that they're bringing that technology.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jonah Chester and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Wes Martin, and he's also our engineer today. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB News and Public Affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.